creating spaces for people to thrive in or to heal or to learn. Why can't we do that for our own team? And so why not let them work when they work best and when they generate their best work or their best ideas? So it's a different type of inclusion than, you're thinking of in a standard workplace. But again, it speaks to that. How can we support people in their larger life as they're working?
Hey there, it's Angela, and I'm so glad you found your way here to architecting. Creative careers can be stressful, and it's hard to be vulnerable, but this is your landing pad for raw honesty. I'll help you get clarity, reconnect with your passion, and have the career of your dreams. If you're ready to make a difference, have an impact, and say bye-bye to burnout, stick with me, and let's get architecting. Hey, Bright Lights, welcome back to Architecting. I am really excited today to celebrate International Women's Day 2024 by interviewing my friend Diana Nicholas. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Angela.
So Diana and I were co-workers in a past life, but now she is the president and CEO at SOM Architecture in the Boston area. And I'm really excited for you to share your story with our audience today, because it is an amazing tale of being an advocate and seeing what's missing in the industry and not waiting for somebody else to do it. The theme this year for International Women's Day is inclusion. And one of the questions that they're putting in their marketing materials is, if not, why not? That really sums up so much of what you have done.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to be talking with you. And I was thinking about this earlier, so much of the story of sort of how I got where I am and how did I end up with a firm that has this different business model. I would generally start this story when I'm talking about moving to Boston, because at that point I had two children who were very young, and I wanted to know if I could work with a VPN connection occasionally. So that was 2008. But I'm going to back up a little bit further, because when we were working together, I was pregnant with my oldest child, with my first daughter. And I realized when I was on maternity leave, I'm not going to go back to this firm because I'm not going to succeed while I'm also a new mom. I knew I'd be working full time, and I ended up going to another firm, which was great. And I was able to do that. But it's sort of in the back of my mind, I was already thinking about, like, okay, how do I do this? How am I a mom and an architect who wants to advance her career? For me, having children was not going to be a speed bump. Of course, it always is. But you have to decide how you're going to approach that speed bump, right? But when I moved to Boston and I had two daughters, I had come from a firm in Cleveland that I had been happy with, and they had, after some discussions, let me have a VPN connection, which, again, not something people were doing a lot of in 2008, but I could work a little bit extra at the end of the day, or if my kid was sick or whatever. And that was great. And I wanted to be able to do that again. This was early in 2008 when the market was good. This was before the big crash. So I had interviews at eight firms, big firms in Boston, and I asked all of them, okay, so could I have a VPN connection in case I want to work from home? Can you talk to me a little bit about, work-life balance, those things? And I mean, some of the people gave me these looks like I was just an alien. And I thought, okay, this is challenging. But I went to Burt Hill and interviewed there. And my now partner said, well, everyone can have a laptop here. And if you live further out from the city, that's okay. Like, you have a laptop, you can work on the train. And I thought, okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate that there's this ability to do kind of what I'm looking for. So that's the job that I took. I had three offers. We all still came to work every day for the most part. So it wasn't like that foreign from what I had experienced in other firms, but it still gave me enough of what I needed to sort of balance things a little, because I had a pretty long commute, et cetera. So then Burt Hill got acquired, and I had been promoted. I was a principal at Stantec when they got acquired. And my now partner said to me, I don't know, like, is this, do we want to do this? So after about a year and a half, they moved our architectural group in with other folks. And we just thought, this isn't really kind of the vibe we want. We had a family sort of feel to the office before the acquisition and before moving. And we also knew that there was another acquisition of architects coming. And we just thought, let's just do it. Let's just start a new firm. I had no idea what I was getting into, I can safely say. My partner had had his own firm in South Africa on and off for like 15 years. Like he knew how to do this. He'd been the managing principal of Bird Hill, and I was like, yeah, let's do it. And we decided that at that point, we really wanted to experiment and really do a completely work whenever you want, wherever you want kind of firm, give people unlimited vacation, but also give everyone the same set of tools. The goal is create a level playing field for everyone. People weren't using the word inclusion then. This was 2014, but that's the concept behind it. So we did that. And the first few years, we ended up attracting some really talented architects from other firms who happened to be mothers or going through some, transition in their life where they thought, okay, I could really appreciate this work model. And I mean, we were new, right? Like we weren't winning the big new building, the shiny projects, right? We had some interesting work, but people really at that point were absolutely coming for the business model. They wanted to be able to work that way. And then over time, those moms brought more women. Not everybody was a mom, but like we just seemed to sort of attract women. And the more women that we've had, we seem to keep attracting women. And now that we're like 36 people, we have three men in the firm. It was never by design, and we are always looking for talent. And so we want to be inclusive in that way, and we strive to be that way. Nevertheless, it's a different vibe than some firms, I would say. But it's been an amazing journey. We're going to be 10 years old this year. And sort of watching how the firm has evolved in so many different ways is really satisfying to look back at and see sort of where we are today versus where we were when we started.
I love that it just started by saying, is it crazy to want a little bit of flexibility in how I do my job? And back in 2008, that did feel crazy. To have laptops universally was crazy. So, for those of you who are newer to the profession, we do want to set that table so you realize just how big of a deal it was to give workers that amount of autonomy. But I also don't think trusting people or empowering people was a new business model. It just wasn't a common one at bigger firms. I mean, I remember I was really fortunate. My first job worked at a very small firm, and the owner of the firm kind of let me do whatever I wanted and encouraged me to be part of professional organizations and things like, we should have a website. You want to try and build one for us? It's interesting what can happen because he didn't doubt me, so I didn't doubt me. So I bravely raised my hand for all kinds of crazy stuff, some of which I had no skill set for at all and had to learn on the fly. But I wasn't afraid to say yes. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about what made you willing to say yes and what creating that environment does for your staff.
Didn't totally know what I was getting into. So part of my yes was like, yeah, I mean, I have no idea what we're doing really, but I learned it. But he obviously had trust in me, same thing. And he continues to be someone who really is about empowering staff. And the longer that I've worked with him and the longer that we've had this business, the more I respect his ability to do that because, there are times when I'm thinking, can this person actually do that? And of course, yes, you need to give people that opportunity. And you need to be willing to sort of be there if it's not going quite right. But we still, want to be able to say yes to each other, but also to have people in our office that feel that they can say yes, that they have what they need in terms of opportunities, tools, again, skills, that kind of thing.
When people do have that empowerment, what do you see different about how they act at work or what they're willing to do or how far they'll take ideas?
I would say there are sort of a couple of components to how people take on that responsibility. And part of it really does have to do with acknowledging the business model. And it's not that we're saying to people, you need to do A, B, C. People learn very quickly when they start at some. You have to be a good communicator. You have to be willing to reach out with any questions, especially young people. We've really had to make sure when we hire young people, you have to be able to ask questions. You have to be able to tell people what you're doing, where you want to be. And over the years, yeah, we've seen amazing, amazing stories of people who, regardless of life circumstances, have realized, okay, well, this is going to take a little more effort than I thought, But this is a great opportunity. You know, this is not a firm where just because we're family friendly or life balance progressive, any of those things, it doesn't mean that you're just going to work like a certain number of tasks and that kind of thing. I mean, I could tell you so many stories of people that have been given an opportunity and developed amazing careers and client relationships. That's the most satisfying thing to see, right? Is that we now have a team that's got their own client relationships that are well respected, well trusted, brought all kinds of ideas to the table. Watching people do things that other firms would say, no, you can't do that. And so we've had a couple of cases of people who've taken off time from the profession and then they've come back. And oh, by the way, they might not know Revit. Hey, that's okay. You hire smart people, you teach them Revit, and off they go. You know, I think that we all have this sort of set resume or skill set that we're looking for when we're hiring. And we've learned to be more open-minded about that, looking at people's experience and just having that conversation. Okay, so if you want to move into this role, what is that going to look like? What do you need to do? From a design point of view and career point of view, I guess people feel that they have a voice. In terms of the way that we operate over the years, people have come up with other ideas about how to sort of work better, how to supplement things. People always talk about culture, like, how did you get this culture to happen? Well, Koos and I, Koos is my partner, it's not that we dictated the culture. It really comes from the people, right? I always have to give credit to all the people that have worked at SOM who have decided they will make this business model work. In addition to that, our clients, it's not just the people in our office, our clients understand how we work and support it. Give them credit for being open-minded about it too. Yeah, it's true. We let people work whenever and wherever they want, but you can call them anytime. You have their cell phone number. It's on our website, you know. And by the way, clients are people too, and they might need to meet at 7:30 in the morning, or they might need to talk to you after 5 o'clock once their kid's soccer game is over. We're there for that. We're all doing the same thing. So let's sort of acknowledge that this is not a structure that we all have to live in, and that's architects and clients.
That is something that our industry is slow to acknowledge, that we're not really a service industry. Architects are here to co-create with our clients to really create solutions that maybe nobody knew existed before and meet those needs so the people who use the spaces are their best selves in those spaces. It's not a transactional thing. It's not a power play thing. So many times it becomes that. And then it's so easy in our profession to take on the role of the waitress, then filling an order versus the expert who's here to guide you through to a good solution.
Yeah, it's interesting you say it. This is not a service industry so much because I do still like very firmly believe that. But it's about what you're giving that client, right? How are you servicing them? What's in their best interest? And your point about creating spaces for people to thrive in or to heal or to learn, why can't we do that for our own team, right? We have people that work best at 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning. We have other people who really don't get much done before 11 o'clock. And so why not let them work when they work best and when they generate their best work or their best ideas? We see a lot of that. Although when we've kind of studied it, overall, people still work pretty close to like 8 to 5, 9 to 6, those types of things for a number of reasons. You know, you want people to be present and you want them to have their best thinking cap, right? They need to be giving you the best of all that they can, right?
One of the important things about the way you've structured the firm and the way you empower people is you've created a lot of psychological safety. So people feel comfortable being vulnerable. That's not a cultural trait that is very prevalent in pretty much any business model, forget architecture firms. How do you think that differentiates things that you have that psychological safety in place?
That's an interesting observation, but I agree with it. We do. You know, before the pandemic, we always used to joke that we make HR people very nervous because people are much more open about their life circumstances. You know, if I'm going to be gone because my kid is sick or because I don't know, we just knew a lot more about each other than most, I think, traditional workplace scenario than most firms would. And we were comfortable with that. So I think there's some psychological safety in that. Certainly when the pandemic happened, people were like learning, oh, that person has a cat, that person has two kids, whatever, because it was all on camera. You could tell like that it took a while for people to sort of be okay with that. So it's good to see that I think there's more of that than there was before. So hopefully that is one of the positive benefits for everyone coming out of the pandemic. Psychological safety also exists, I think, in our teams, because people have told us that it doesn't feel like it's a competitive environment because people really want to help each other succeed in what they're doing for work and what they're doing outside of work. So if somebody's going to be gone, like if they're going on some big trip that they've been wanting to go on, they're going to do what they can to cover their work. They are going to have team members who are willing to step up to the plate and make sure they can do what they need to do. They also, if they have ownership of their work, often will take their laptop or their cell phone and check in because, again, they care about what's happening, right? They want to know that their issues are being addressed if need, or they want to be available if they can support their coworkers, even though they're not in the office. And the work-life balance is really a life balance, we say sometimes, because it is more of a blended approach to how you're doing everything. And I think just having the freedom of knowing that is how you're approaching things is just beneficial to people in many, many ways.
Becomes then work can energize you, not drain you, because you're able to do it when you can do it, when it makes sense. You're able to also get the other kinds of, I call them forms of rest that you need, because you can have your downtime with your family when you need it, or do something fun or interesting that's inspiring to you, or travel or whatever. You have the energy then to put back into your work versus always grinding away, so that what you have to give is not really all that great because you're pretty toxic by that point.
No, it's true. I think people feel like if they need to take a day off, they can take a day off just because, right? Just to catch their breath. You know, I worked in firms where you got comp time if you worked a lot of hours, but it's just not quite the same, I think, again, psychologically. And I also should just say, like, people work hard. We have a lot of people that work overtime when they need to. We've just gone through a big growth spurt. And so people have really had to step up to the plate while we're hiring, make sure that we're still doing good work. So it goes up and down. But overall, I think people would tell you that, yeah, they know that they can take the time they need for different things. We also have people that work from all over the globe, really. This might be a good opportunity to tie that to inclusion a bit. We have a lot of people whose families are abroad. And, you know, if you have a standard 2 or 3 week vacation policy, it's almost impossible to go see your family wherever they are, right? We have someone who's going to work this summer from China. For, I don't know, 4 weeks. That's fine with us, right? Just as long as you're communicating or if you want to take off some time. We have a recent grad who's nomadic, and she and her partner are trusted house sitters. And so they travel all over the globe, mostly in the US, but they've been abroad some. Then they come back to New England for a while and we'll do some house sitting here. And that's been really fun to sort of observe. So those kinds of scenarios have actually allowed us to draw, I think, a more diverse community in our firm. Because we have people who know that they can go abroad and be abroad. So it's a different type of inclusion than, you know, you're thinking of in a standard workplace. But again, it speaks to that. How can we support people in their larger life as they're working?
It is important, and I think is going to only grow in importance as people become more separated from families and things like that. The desire to travel more is going to be more important. While you didn't create a woman's firm, that seems to have magnetized to you. And I know you yourself have, over the course of your career, gotten involved in groups that support women as architects or women in the AEC industry. And I was wondering if you could share your insights on when it's valuable to be with women versus just out there as a professional, not letting the fact that you're a woman be the leading way that you're defined.
So actually, the first group of women architects that I interacted with was in Cleveland. We had, at that point, it was a pretty small women in design group. I mean,
Yeah, I remember that group.
we could go to dinner at, you know, and get a table for 8 or 10 people, right? And so it's good. I mean, there's a lot that's happened in Cleveland since I left, and I've seen lots of women move into great positions of leadership. When I moved to Boston, when I became a principal at Stantec, I then started going to the Women Principals Group at the AIA, which is in Boston, called the Boston Society for Architecture. So we call it the BSA. And that group was incredible. It was really, for me as a young principal, it was wonderful to see these women who had achieved these incredible things in all kinds of roles, leading firms, working on the client side. I think that's really important because we all work in our firm and we don't necessarily see those people in those roles. In my experience, I'd had one principal I'd worked under who was female before I became a principal, like after having worked for 15 years. So to be able to interact with these women who were also incredibly gracious in the way that they share their experience. And this group still exists and it's wonderful. And everybody understands that what we talk about there stays there. But it's about how you can run your firm better and what does the market look like. But still, there's something about that particular context that's very powerful. It's great to see the women in design groups across the country, right, that are popping up. And the sort of mid-career mentoring that's happening. I know we do that in Boston. I think it happens in other places too as well. I think that's really important. I've had great conversations with some of the mentees that I've had about kind of where they are as a woman in the profession and, you know, what kind of firm do they want to be in and do they see a path for advancement where they're going and what about that firm creates that path? Is it the people in charge? Is it, you know, the types of projects they do? Is, you know, what is it? And how are you going to sort of engage in that? But also, I think the Women's Leadership Summit has also been really, really influential for me. And I think for many women, and it's been fun to see how that has evolved over the years. I think that's a really wonderful opportunity for any women in the profession. And honestly, they've opened it up. It's not just for women. There are some really incredible topics on, you know, working in firms and what does it mean as a woman? And, you know, and those obviously spill into things like life balance discussions and those topics. Another powerful way to engage with women.
What I take away from it, because if you were to ask me to describe myself, the fact that I'm a woman would probably be way down the list, because there's other things about how I see myself that are more prominent for sure. And I think a lot of people are that way. I'm not a woman architect, I'm an
An
architect. Why are you
architect,
trying to
right.
qualify what I am? Or are you trying to minimize the fact that I'm an architect by calling me a woman architect? But one
Yeah.
thing I have seen that I think is important to note is that a lot of the issues that we call women's issues in the profession really are universal. And when we listen to and accommodate these issues, things like flexible work time and psychological safety in the work environment, more collaborative, supportive versus competitive teams, that benefits everyone. By questioning the premise of work as done, we're actually helping our profession to be better because we are doing this. The value, I think, of the women's groups in whatever form they're in, whether they're at a national or a local level, is that you get to see people like you, but you also get to see what else is possible. If you aren't shown this example and you bring it up and somebody shoots it down, you're going to walk away and say, well, I guess that doesn't make sense or doesn't work. But when we can see somebody who can make it work, and we go, oh, we really could do things in a different way.
Right. Yeah. I was thinking about all of the different sort of women's groups that I've been in. And I've been very wary of conversations within groups like that that become about like, what's wrong with men in the profession? Because that's not what we're talking about. That's not why. And I, you know, I think sometimes there's this perception that that's what the discussion is. No, that's not what we're doing. I mean, it's about empowering women, right? And that doesn't mean we have to detract from the work that any of our colleagues are doing. As people are trying to find those groups that are supportive, whatever they look like, you know, you want to make sure it's something that's positive, right? And that's really going to empower you in new ways that you might not be already.
Yeah, I'm glad you made that point because so much that we can point to as wrong in our profession comes from lack-based thinking. But then feeling like a victim doesn't help you change things. It's
Right.
when you believe that you can make change for the better. When you say, how can I, instead of I can't because, and you know, here's my list of gripes, that's when we really see change. And you have really stepped into that role of advocate, whether it was intentional or not, because you were bold enough to create this firm and pursue this business model. The last thing I wanted to explore with you was how you dealt with setbacks or failures, why you think it's important to share what you're doing, and where you think that ripple effect might be.
I hope that I've been an advocate, but it really came out of the fact that people were asking questions. Like, how can you do that? How can you collaborate on design? And to me, it feels like, well, it's not that hard. You just do ABC. But as I did that more, I also, like we as a firm, got better at articulating the business case. That was important for us to share with other people. Like, I want people, if I come talk to people about my firm and how we became who we are and what we've done, I want them to feel empowered to go back and either start their own firm or talk to the leadership, or if they're already leaders, to think about how they can change things the way that they want to. And so sometimes, the business side of it is helpful, like, oh, our carbon emissions are so much lower. Oh, every single person in our firm that's had a child has come back after parental leave. Like, how does that happen? That's something that the AIA is like trying to figure out. How do we keep people in this profession, right? So the role of advocate has really evolved. You asked about sort of lessons learned along the way. Like, what have we done that didn't go as planned, I suppose. I sort of alluded to this earlier, but we learned very early on that young people are going to have maybe kind of a different view of how we work. So we have to be really cognizant of the fact that they're not going to be sitting next to someone doing Revit with someone 3 feet away from them, right? How are they going to learn? Do they recognize that they're going to have to advocate for themselves to sort of acquire this knowledge that's messy and hard to get in this profession? And we had one architect who was awesome, like really bright young woman. After about a year, she said, you guys are great, but I really want to be in a firm where people go out for drinks on Friday nights. We actually have happy hour on Monday nights, which is another story. But she said, and I want like a big ARE study group. And at that point, we were probably like 15 people or so. And we were like, we totally get it. You're right. Like, it's great that you came and told us this. Let us get you some interviews at some really good firms in town. And we did. And she went to one of those firms and her career took off. But for us, that was kind of like, okay, we need to be clear with people. Like, these are the opportunities you have. It may look different. So even now, we've had to think about this with young people. We had a co-op student at one point who we really wanted to hire. And so we were trying to hire her just as everyone was coming out of the pandemic. And she's like, I actually want to go to a firm where it's in person, because I've been in my dorm room for 2 years, basically, and I want to learn. And we were like, nope, we totally get that. Because we're larger now, we have more people coming into the office, but we also try to pair people with younger people and say, hey, it'd be great if you could be in the office. You're working on the same project. You guys can talk about things face to face. That's better. So that's one of the lessons we've learned. One of the other lessons we've learned is how to have the conversation with clients about the way we work. Because initially we were kind of like, people don't really need to know this is how we're working, because it may freak them out and they're going to think they're going to have, less service than they would have from other firms. I wish that we had started that earlier. We happen to have a lot of clients now who just really know and understand. And the majority of our clients are either private university, or the vast majority is really public agencies. I don't know. They've just been really open. It's been a surprise to me, but they've been very supportive and understand that we're there for them and we're going to do what we need to do. And to your point, we're going to bring the ideas to the table and do what you've hired us to do. I can't say there are a lot of things that jump out to me that we would have done differently. We've been very fortunate. And I do have to credit, again, my partner, because he's the one who's always had a more open mind, which is probably still true today, in terms of how people can work, how they can excel, all of those things. He arrived at the beginning of this with more lessons learned than I had.
It's also the persistence and how you know we're on the right track. We just need to tweak it, or that's not going to work.
Yeah. This business model is not for everyone. It's not going to work for every firm, and it's not going to work for every person. I mean, I talked about the young person who left, but we've had other people who just haven't quite gotten it, and they tend to leave on their own because either they want, like, I want a desktop where I work from 8 to 5 life, which is fine if that's how that's what you should do. Or they didn't really understand that, as we say, flexibility works both ways. We want you to come in for a meeting because you have this client relationship and you need to develop that and you need to have ownership of your work. Some people look at it as like, okay, well, I'm not going to work ever on Wednesdays. That's where I say it is a client service business. Like, you do still have to kind of make sure that we're doing what we need to be doing. It's not for everyone, but I think we've gotten better at sort of having more detailed discussions when we're interviewing people to make sure that they're comfortable with that, that they understand. We also encourage them to talk to current employees. Like, we'll connect them with a handful of people and say, hey, talk to them about what it's like to work here. Don't just take our word for it.
I think even for people for whom this exact model isn't the right fit, the fact that you're out there and you're doing it and you're talking about it and it's successful still moves the needle for everyone else.
I hope so. But I do see a lot of firms out there that are doing other innovative things in terms of how they're structuring their practice and, how they're recruiting people. I mean, there are fully remote firms. That was never anything that people could conceptualize. We like our hybrid model, or I guess we really are now using the term remote first, but there are a lot of other great conversations out there. It's encouraging.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for taking the time to share your career path and everything you're doing with Som, how you are accommodating different needs in the profession and create a really distinctive work culture. For those who might want to reach out to you, how can they best contact you and learn about the firm?
Well, you can go to our website and everyone's emails and phone numbers are there. So you can find me. I will tell you there are two Dianas. So I'm Diana Nicholas, the CEO, but the COO, Diana Osberg. She'll also answer your questions probably, but that's the best way to reach out. And so it's just www.saam-arch.com. And we keep our employee handbook on the website because people always have questions like, what does that look like? We've had to sort of tweak that and have different versions for different states. But overall, all of the stuff about the flexibility and leave and all that is on there. People are curious.
Well, thank you for being so generous with sharing something I know you probably put a lot of time and effort into putting together so that it can be a template.
I didn't have to do too much, but we had a lot of lawyers involved too, of course, along the way. We are happy to share that. Yeah, people can take whatever they would like from that.
It speaks back to that idea of being collaborative, not competitive. So
Yeah,
I
we
love
want.
that you're doing that. Really loved our chat today. And I know I'm going to be seeing you in a couple weeks. You're coming to Cincinnati to talk a little bit more about
Yes.
some of these issues.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
Take
Okay.
everyone.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening. If you want even more content, head on over to architectingpodcast.com and subscribe to my newsletter and get some great free downloads while you're there. Be sure to follow me on social media on Instagram at Architecting Podcast, Facebook and LinkedIn pages are Architecting, and the YouTube channel Architecting Podcast. Stay inspired.